talking about Natchez, you're right there.
I know, I'm right in the... That's why I'm here, I think.
But the Nazis are not a problem anymore. The Bolsheviks are from Russia. You see, Germany, World War II, Germany defeated. The refugees are the elite power structure of Germany, right?
Yes.
The old Bolshevik power structure in the Soviet Union has been defeated. Their emigres, the losers in that battle that Gorbachev won, his faction. Therefore, the Bolsheviks were forced to flee from the Soviet Union in the late 70s. And they've influenced a lot of American culture, just like the Nazis did in the 50s and 60s. So we're talking Bolsheviks now. The Nazi thing, it's the same pattern. The industrial complex headquartered in the United States on a certain level always takes the collaborators that work with them in secret deals with the empire they had in any part of the world. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Bolsheviks, what we're dealing with here. That's why Maloney was Bolshevik controlled in the early 80s, but the Rockefellers have made a comeback. The Bolsheviks are weakened and they're retrenching in the Middle East and in Europe. The big news, Wayne Morris dropped off a... Was it Wayne Morris? No, Edward. I'll be giving it to Wayne Morris. Edward gave me an article from the Globe Mail yesterday. Licio Gelli, one of the main Bolshevik agents in the Vatican, has been found not guilty. He won his appeal. He now can run for the European Parliament. There's a big key to the power of the Bolsheviks in Europe, that Licio Gelli can be scot-free from any proceedings in Italy and move on to his destiny.
Where is Licio now?
He's in Italy.
He
just got off. He got convicted a few years ago of bombing in Bologna, the train station in 1980. All right?
The Bologna one.
Yeah, and now they reversed that.
Yeah.
They just recently reversed that, and he and his buddies got off. So on November 8th, 1988, the Globe Mail had another article the day George Bush was elected where Licio Gelli was called the puppet master, still pulls the strings, even though he still had the guilty sign hanging over him. He was getting ready to run for the European Parliament. So I imagine now he can run for the European Parliament because he's been found not guilty. That's a serious maneuver of what's really going on in Europe right now. Okay?
Yeah.
So we got to go. We got other calls.
Okay.
Thanks, Torbert. And check out the disc, Defense Industrial Security Command, hidden building in Columbus.
I will. I'll go down there tomorrow.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. So, while Bob runs to the next studio, picks up his headphones, reminder that you're listening to CKLN 88.1 in Toronto. Bob is exasperated because he hasn't gotten to any of his notes tonight, and we do have more phone calls. I just noticed, Bob, when you were talking in here, that there's a conference transfer line. I wonder if that means we could hook up, line to line to line, and get people on the phone talking to one another.
Okay, that's it. Can you try it?
Why not?
If this caller, keep him on hold after he's finished.
Okay, should we go right to the caller?
Yeah.
Okay, the number is 595-1478, and with these brand new phones by Toshiba of Canada Inc., you can now call 595-1655 as well. Oh, okay, so let's go to this caller. Hello?
Hi, Mike.
Hello,
Mike.
Ray.
Oh, it's Ray with the sixth ray.
We've made it to the space age now. It's about time, Bob. CIUT is light years behind.
Yeah, I mean, they could interview me, they could interview Bob Marshall, they have this guy passing through, you know, and he just creates confusion. But it's like the battle between CIT and CKLN, everybody maintaining their territory and standing off is miming the walls reconstructed by the various media archetypes. It's the same thing happened locally, right?
Right. Is the tower up yet? Are the electricians, have they finished their work yet? Or?
No, not yet.
They're still on a lunch break.
Oh, lunch break.
Yeah.
But, Ray, the important thing is we did get the phones. They were talked about for several months, and it was achieved. So kudos to the management, or to the executive, or what do we call them, Mike? The CKLN executive.
Yes.
They pulled it off. Very good. Okay, Ray, do you want to talk about the sixth ray, the last ray, and we can get that over with, or you have some new things to talk about? Well... Ray's gone?
Yes. Ray's going. He'll call back.
Okay, Mike. We're just getting used to the new technology here.
I'm trying to.
How do you know why you disconnected him? How that
I think Kent was just trying to call as well. So it's okay. Don't worry about it, Bob.
Well, I figure it's just right. Is that Ray's going to do the sixth ray? And I don't think we need it.
He may be doing it right now.
Yeah, I think he should listen to this next message. We have the next tape of a short message, but really relevant since we're getting a lot of vibration from California tonight. The Frank episode comes out of California. I have a very interesting tape which we can think about and try to conceptualize, hard as it is. This is a Exus press conference done in Sonoma, California on February 18th, 1990. You got that, Mike, with the Exus label on there? Don't start yet. What this is a whole hour and 10-minute press conference, but the particular item that we're going to play here is the power that California is going to occupy over the next 10 years in the realm of biological research. And the Exus laid out some of the effects of that monopoly that California is going to have. And so there's some surprising images they give of future products coming out of biological research. So, Mike, shall we go with that, or are you fiddling around with something else? Are you okay?
Now, what industry is that across the next area of time? Look to biologicals. California will be one of the leaders in biological changes across this next decade. Genetic alteration, plant life, animal life, look for it. High probability that the first dinosaur will be constructed in California. From cellular material will be found in certain areas of the Russian North. Look for that. Is this a frivolity? Far from it. Considerable gains from this. Research into cellular aging in California will result in that the lifespan of the human cell will go from 6 cellular changes to 12 cellular changes. An ethical, theological argument will rage in 96-97 about extending the age of humans to 150 and 170 as to if these lives are continued and the number of children being born into this world continues, there will be only standing room left. Not so. The greater problem that California has is the lack of trained people. More trained people come, but that which is necessary to bring these trained people is not the weather, not the climate meteorologically, but the climate intellectually. As California became to be known as an intellectual refuge, and we assure you that those words are carefully chosen, you'll find that you will have find these people coming.
Okay, Mike, that was the Exus press conference, February 18th, 1990, in Sonoma, California, discussing the future of California in biological research and in cellular aging research. Mike, you were very busy with the technical stuff there, but did you catch that? They're going to make dinosaurs. Did you catch that?
No.
You couldn't hear that.
That important part of
yeah, Mike is protected on a certain level of this kind of stuff. I mean, Kent, did you hear the dinosaur point? No, nobody heard it. Maybe Ray did. I'm sure Dublin would have a lot to say about this fact that they're going to have some beneficial effects of bringing back the dinosaurs, which, of course, is what Beefheart, Captain Beefheart, claimed 20 years ago, that he wanted to have the dinosaurs back. He really, personally, was fascinated with the dinosaurs. We got a call. Are you going to live to 150 years, Kent? Okay, Ray, did you listen
this
to that?
Is your laugh track.
Yeah.
You're always using me as a laugh track.
Yeah. Did you catch that, Exus statement?
Yeah, it's heavy.
Yeah,
it's dinosauric.
Yeah, it's right up your alley. You're interested in aging.
Aye.
All right. Well, I guess it's just there to think about, right? What do we do about it? We just, there it is, that's what's coming, get ready kind of thing, right?
Yeah, they're always light years ahead of the rest of the continent.
What's that again?
California is always light years ahead of the rest of the continent. So.
Well, in some ways, it hasn't been, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't in mood popular culture. It's been way behind, but it's always important in the power structure. And William Irwin Thompson spelled that out in the book Pacific Shift. He explains the significance of California and why all the major politicians and presidents come out of there. That's why Jimmy Carter failed. He didn't come from California, right?
He didn't follow the sun where the sun goes down.
All right. So do you want to talk about the sixth ray?
Yeah,
let's finish off with the...
Just before you do, Ray, I think you're the person to ask this question. I have a description here by a critic. What do you think this applies to? What would be this... What is this a description of? A see-it-and-say-it-yourself television set or a bath? All right? How about another description? An editorial gangbang. A graffiti contest. A fantasy. A distress signal. A threatening note. A disturbance of the peace. A pumpkin. A prefrontal lobotomy. An invitation to a beheading. A paper orgy. A pictorial being. What do those describe? What do you think?
Trash TV?
No, that's not what they describe here.
Well, I've seen those things on TV.
Yeah, okay. Trash TV is what it sounds like to you? That's
well,
what it is.
It appeared to me in that form, but it's probably comes through many forms.
Well, what I'm thinking of, it's not what goes over the air in my show, but it is what my table looks like, and you've been down here, the subplot of this operation here, my script and that. The subscript here is, I think that describes the subscript here.
Absolutely.
On my table, you've seen it.
It's anarchy in its highest form.
Yeah, thank you. Okay,
but,
the sixth ray.
It's angelic and demonic, and that's what counts.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's finish off with the
sixth ray.
Sixth ray in our typically non-linear fashion. We're finishing off the sixth ray, and I'd like you all to know that there are seven chakras.
Good.
This is the violet ray, the solar plexus chakra.
Yeah.
The sixth ray of devotion. Special virtues, devotion, single-mindedness, love, tenderness, intuition, loyalty, and reverence. Vices, selfish and jealous love, over-leaning on others, partiality, self-deception, sectarianism, superstition, prejudice, and over-rapid conclusions, fiery anger. Virtues to be acquired, strength, self-sacrifice, purity, truth, tolerance, serenity, balance, and common sense. Glamours, fanaticism, possessiveness, and over-devotion, narrow-mindedness, love of the past and existing forms, reluctance to change, rigidity, too much intensity of feeling. Man on this ray is full of religious instincts and impulses, and intense personal feeling. Everything is either perfect or intolerable. Think he must always have a personal god. The best type is a saint, the worst a bigot, fanatic or martyr. Religious wars and crusades all originated on the sixth ray energy. He is a poet of the emotions, Tennyson, devoted to beauty and color. Approach to healing by faith and prayer. Approach to path, prayer and meditation aimed at union with the Godhead.
Okay, Ray, that brings up Erica M. Thanks. You know Erica M. on MTV? Even the sixth ray people reach out for Bob and, you know, my work and my slack and my happiness and my sadness and, you know, my interview, my language.
To the Bob head.
Yeah, to the Bob head. The funny thing is that Erica M. is now living, has a live-in roommate, a lover roommate, you know, whatever they call it today, right?
You're kidding me, Bob.
Yeah, now this person that she's living with, and I hope her buddies are listening so she can pass this on and confront them on it, that person has slept in Bob and Connie's bed. 7 years ago, Erica M's present lover. So let's hope it gets around so we could get Moses Neimer down here for that bobhead interview that we need to do to help him get rid of his ponytail.
City TV first.
Yeah.
We'll be paid well in the end, Bob.
Okay, the other point, Ray, which is really relevant for you, since you would like to emphasize, I don't know what you call it, the spiritual, the old, the new, the relevant, the radio aesthetic.
The new age, old age.
Yeah, radio synesthesia. The thing that is relevant to you, you know, we've been talking media study, and you heard the beginning message from somebody talking about the value of McLuhan and that all of us should learn to study the media effects.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think much is happening here in my mandate to get this out because It's been 8-9 months now, and nobody has given the hidden technological ground to the reason why the Berlin Wall went down. And I'm giving you an opportunity to correct this gap in our knowledge, pattern recognition. Ray, have you got a chance?
The hidden ground?
Yeah, what would be the new technological environment that would cause the Berlin Wall to become a figure of concern?
Solar fusion?
Nope.
Solar-lunar fusion.
No. Think more on electric technology.
Okay. Satellite.
No, that's an old environment. That created the Yippies, you know, global theater.
Yeah.
In the 60s. One more chance, Ray. You're counting on it.
Radionic?
No. Okay, Ray, here's the point. Now, this will be obvious to you. You know, we're already well imploded in the electronic overlay of various kinds of tactile technologies, right?
Yeah.
But it creates an incredible geological sensitivity, so even parts of the world that don't have this new environment, which usually comes out of the West, right, the new high-tech innovation, they don't, may not own it, may not use it, but they will feel the effects and respond just as much as the people who created the environment, the Western world. Now, that new environment, which surfaced a few years ago, was the fax machine.
Yeah.
Nobody has talked about this. Now, how did the...
Well, I just haven't got one yet. But I will slack
yeah,
to come.
It's an invisible environment working on you.
Yeah.
And that's proof that these new environments are always invisible unless you're Bob, because it's never occurred to George or to Wayne Morris or to Jim or anybody, you know, that the fax machine is the hidden ground for the rapid change of events over the last 3 years. Now, why the fax machine? Because the fax machine moves paper. It moves visual information. And, of course, in the future, you won't even be moving information. Or you won't be moving paper. You'll be just inputting into someone else's computer, right?
Strictly energy transfer.
Yeah, but it'll be it's usually visual information. Now, what this does to the user of the fax machine is that they bypass bureaucracy, which comes out of visual information. Visual paper, visual media creates a bureaucratic effect. Now, when everybody has a fax machine, they can be bureaucrats without the bureaucracy. Okay? So...
Total decentralization.
Total decentralization. What was the last hangover of the bureaucratic phase? The communist state and the Berlin Wall. So the fax machine was the stimulator of a political revolution in the sense that the Eastern European gang is screaming for democracy, which is a bureaucratic setup, all right? And they saw, from the effect of the fax machines, the image of the end of bureaucracy, yet their solution is another bureaucracy, but a participatory democracy. Bureaucracy, a participatory bureaucracy called democracy. So I think I'm right on that this is the first time in the world you'll hear this, that the fax machine is the hidden ground to the changes in 1989.
And we heard it first here with Bob.
And with you, Ray. Thanks a lot. Mike's ready for the next caller. Now, do you want to do an intercom with this? You want to try?
No, I'm not going to try. Let's go to another caller. This person's waiting. Hi.
Okay, Ray. Bye.
New caller. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh.
Hi. Oh.
Oh, these Toshiba phones. Sorry, I just...
Okay. Sorry, we were just making some coffee with it, Edward. They're wonderful machines.
Oh, I was at a big revival. I mean, there's a new cult, Bob, and I don't know if you know what this is. It's taking place in the third floor of the Doctors for Bob building.
Yes, I've heard about this, Edward. Yeah.
Your spouse was there, Mike, I'm afraid to say.
I passed her on the road, and she had like some glazed look over her.
Oh, glazed. I mean, this made... Amway looked like a soup, a lemonade stand.
Yeah.
You know, it was.
Were you there?
I was there. It's a volcanic ash cult.
Zeolite.
Zeolite.
It's a viable product, and Connie's going to get a monopoly again, therefore making me richer as usual. And zeolite is where you want to go. Just call, 653-1464 if you want to get in on it.
Yeah. But actually, it is a serious...
it's real.
Ecologically friendly product from the Earth. It's volcanic in origin. Soviets dumped zeolite on the Chernobyl site.
Yeah.
One of the pilots actually subsequently died. But that's how powerful these volcanic crystals are in many forms.
But, Edward, the reason we've got a monopoly on it here is that the mine with the best zeolite is in possession of Connie's network. The Russians were using an inferior zeolite. I mean, it's used a bit in Europe. They know about it.
Yeah.
But the mine that we have is going to create the best healing, purging, and purification.
Yeah.
It gets rid of all odors and all levels. I mean, Midas, Muffler, they're going to need this stuff, mm-hmm. right? In their, yep. their gas stations, their
yeah.
garages.
In fact, there's actually, there is the zeolite monopoly, as you mentioned, under the brand name Nonsense, but there are some pretenders. You know, they've got a little volcano maybe in Utah. They've got an inferior zeolite. The geologist was there tonight with an evangelical fervor. I like geologists.
Yeah,
they're
Paul
all
Roper. Paul Roper's his name, right?
And
Mr. Roper?
Mr. Roper.
Yeah.
Oh, Dr. Roper.
Dr. Roper, yeah.
Yes. But the other thing I want to talk about was the dinosaur. I mean, this kind of segues nicely. The way it was described by the exist, he seemed like such a cute little dinosaur. You know, he probably started off young.
Like a Flintstone or a Simpson.
Dino, yeah.
Simpsons dinosaur, Matt Groening kind of thing, right?
Yeah, and it made me think of a very poignant story about another prehistoric animal that Solzhenitsyn told a very touching anecdote about a high-level camp in the far north of the Soviet Union in the 50s. This was a apocryphal story, but I think it's true that it was a camp for really not common criminals, but, you know, intellectual criminals of the era, so-called. So they all were highly educated political prisoners. In the snow one day, someone found, one of the prisoners, a strange frozen creature. It seemed partly amphibious. It really couldn't be traced, and it seemed to have the substance of the famous frozen woolly mammoth. You know, that kind of perfectly freeze-dried prehistoric creature. What the point Solzhenitsyn was trying to make was, here were these highly educated people. They knew the actual scientific significance of finding something like this, but it was a Siberian work camp, so they cooked it and ate it.
Hmm. And the ex did say that there'll be some cellular structures found in northern Russia, yeah. northern Soviet Union area, which they'll use to make the dinosaurs, right?
Yeah, so that kind of little hollow I felt ever since then, I thought, gee, I'm sorry those guys were hungry, they had to eat. I always wanted to see that thing, whatever it was. It wasn't fish or fowl, and now maybe we'll get a chance to see. Of course, maybe whatever they will create might escape from the lab, you know, and we'll have a script for a 1950s film.
Right.
You know, a small California town is attacked by the thing that escaped from the lab. So maybe that'll really happen.
Yeah, so the ability with man to replay and remake the old nature, not what we call virtual reality today, which is the electric environment. Like, you know, virtual reality is a sign that we've moved into the human scale level past the electronic environment. We're actually in the Bob zone, the eighth level of the chart, the post-Ferlin situation of post-electronic era in our sensibility. That's why... no, I can't go into that yet, Ed. We're not scheduled to do that yet. Let's just go back here with the dinosaurs. The point is that they'll be able to remake the old dinosaurs, at Christmas time when they wish upon a star or whatever it is at Christmas, it shines over the Jerusalem or Bethlehem, that star will be man-made in the future. So all the old nature will be man-made, and the dinosaurs will bring back all those natural phenomenon of evolution. But it won't be real for people. It'll be like sports, spectator sports, right? It'll be something that people will see and witness if they have a socially redeeming value, right? But virtual reality as it's used today in the new electronic post-high-tech situation is an entrancing, hypnotizing anti-environment, as AirSat's fund, right? It's something that mimes a software environment, all right? With a movie element. But so what, Eddie? Let's go on to something. I'd like your response to this. I have a cartoon here. Now, this guy is looking at a TV guide, and I think your response to this would be very helpful for the people listening tonight. He's saying, tonight's choice is in the TV guide, Channel 3. An economist discusses the direction of the Canadian dollar. That's on Channel 3. On Channel 7, a panel of economists explains why the dollar didn't do what they predicted it would. All right? And on Channel 11, at the same time, the finance minister will be predicting total disaster for the dollar. And at the same time, on Channel 13, the Am I doing that?
Oh, that might be me.
Okay, you all right?
Okay, I'm moving. Okay.
Okay, on Channel 13, at the same time, the Prime Minister takes credit for the strong dollar, while the finance minister is on Channel 11 predicting total disaster for the dollar. And in Channel 21 News, an investigation into why none of these clowns has got anything right in 10 years.
Well, the thing that comes right to mind is a platitude from your former neighbor, Marshall McLuhan.
Yeah.
When money travels at the speed of light, and I can't remember how the rest of it.
You can't, it's a platitude that comes to half your mind.
I'm afraid so.
So you're saying something happens to money when it moves at the speed of light. Oh, it inflates. It inflates.
Yeah. I think it inflates and it...
It creates a panic.
Yeah, it creates actually all sorts of... it inflates like a balloon. You let it go also and it spins around the room erratically. So, and, you know, I think you attributed Pink Monday, or also known as Black Monday, October 87, to...
Yeah.
It relates to this cartoon. It relates to... to this fact, money has become 186,000 miles per hour, second, impulse.
Yeah.
That energy of money, you could spend a sheep at Eaton's, I have been told.
Well, you're looking at money, I don't think money is anything. It's only the syndrome of cash is king. That's an image. That's the archetype of the money medium, hoiked up maintaining its own territory in the battle with other media. But if you look at it very long, it melts into an electronic impulse, which then becomes another medium, computer, TV, whatever, right? So each media archetype is translated into the others, like Al Cap Schmooze. Remember those little things that would be anything you want them to be? If you look at anything, it becomes anything else. Bruce Bickford, the amazing clay animation artist who works with Frank Zappa, and you might have seen his work in Baby Snakes, the process he shows when he... plays out his clay animation in movie form or video form is the moving of figure ground flipping into each other, which happens in acoustic space naturally. But he visualizes it, and that's the process that we discussed 2 weeks ago on the show in the effect of the discarnate condition, where you were wondering about the negative parts of it, and we seem to be hoiking up the service parts of it, the good parts of it. This is the process we're in. What do you want to flip into right now?
Well, just the other thing... I think George Bush will be remembered for, he actually let the cat out of the bag. He said it's voodoo economics. And he just was applying it to his at the time opponent, Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
But that has now permeated discourse in North America, voodoo economics. One of your holy officers, Frank Zappa, said it's all voodoo economics. And any Joe or Jane citizen is gradually coming more and more to that conclusion. It's all voodoo economics.
But what does that mean?
If we
let's
want,
let's wrap it up here. Okay.
Yeah. What does
voodoo economics mean?
It means we can invest value in virtually anything.
Oh, it means magic.
Yes.
All right, and it's voodoo media advertising reality. Everything is voodoo now. The images strike their spell. That's what advertising mimes. It's sent out by scattershot, like the old cave drawings in Altamira, right? And those that are influenced by it are subject to the spell. Every environment is like that now. Okay, thanks.
Good night.
We got another caller, Mike?
Well, yeah, we've had two callers waiting for about 15
minutes.
Okay,
well, you can cut us off, Mike.
I do, but you keep going anyway, so...
Well, I'm very interesting.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Hi. How are you folks doing tonight?
Okay, Scott.
I came whipping into town. Half hour ago, I was whipping into town at 140 clicks from Oka, right?
Yeah. You were down there.
I catch the show, tune you in.
And did you catch it on your car?
Yeah, yeah.
And what have you got out of it so far?
Out of tonight's show?
Yeah.
Lots.
It's a good show.
Yeah, it's a good show, but I still think someone's got to turn you on so we can turn off.
Yeah, that's true. How are we going to do that?
I don't know. I just... call it the gossip. I'm lonely, you know.
You want to say something about Oka? You were there?
Not particularly. It was fun. It was fun being out there.
At the media site?
Yeah, I just went out to say my prayers and all.
Yeah, for everybody.
Let's see, what was I going to bring up? Oh, yeah. I was going to claim some credit for the fax machine idea.
Yeah.
This might not have come through, but you remember my message about a couple weeks ago about the armed guards in the borough of Brooklyn or borough of New York somewhere?
Detroit? Wasn't it the Fifth Estate?
Yeah, it was from the Fifth Estate. Yeah. It was talking about recycling. And I said, this is the report from the Eco Facsimile machine.
Right, yeah. Well, you did, I guess you could get credit for the being, Jerry called it the Fox machine about a month ago. So it's been on the Subgenius's nerve endings to be talked about.
Yeah.
You reinforced Jerry's message. But you didn't tell us that it was the hidden ground of 1989, though.
Yeah.
You didn't do that. And what I said... What?
Excuse.
Yeah, what you did, or what I said, has never been said before on the planet, right?
Yeah.
You heard it.
Yeah, I didn't tape it, but I heard it.
Yeah, and it's here. You know, it happened here, and it's true. Once you're here, it makes sense, right?
Uh-huh.
Because the fax machine evokes bureaucratic reality, but as an environment, speed of light environment, it goes around it. So you want to correct the bureaucracy. And the only... Yeah?
Of corrections.
Yeah?
I was kind of annoyed. I was turning over this joke in my mind for the last couple of weeks. Okay, this guy and Charles Manson are sitting in this pub, right?
Yeah.
It's getting late and it's hot and they're drinking beers. But every time the waitress comes over, this guy keeps giving the waitresses these queer looks, right? Like,
yeah.
Really, really curious, really kind of creepy, right? So finally the guy says, hey, is it getting hot in here or am I just matching?
Mike, the hidden joke there is that was a joke that Eddie said last show, and Scott has changed it.
Okay.
All right, another caller?
Yeah, we do. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm still trying to get the new dogma.
You're the Maitreya guy?
Yeah.
We'll get the, you know what I mean by Maitreya, Mike? See, Mike doesn't know anymore. He's lost several shows. But you want to know what I'm talking about.
Well, I was going to bring up Robert Anton Wilson.
Again?
No. Well, I guess I did bring him up once.
Yeah, you brought up the fact that on Frank's birthday, we'll be doubling information every...
every second, yeah.
Every second on December 21st, 2012, right?
Right.
Yeah, I had commented on that statement a couple months before, but yeah, I don't think you had heard the show. The kind of information Anton Wilson is talking about is usually visual categories. And the very thing he's talking about happened 50 years ago. The visually biased person, an American, he still thinks in visual terms, and he's watching the effects of the electric speed up leading to the merging of categories and information being translated into other information like Bruce Pickford's clay animation. This already was expressed by Finnegan's Wake, by James Joyce, this process. See, what happens when you have information overload, which is what he's getting at, what does that flip into? Do you know?
No, I'm already losing
it. Yeah, no, it's okay. You'll get it. It flips into pattern recognition. But it doesn't mean more... information kind of pattern recognition. It means ground pattern recognition.
When you talk about Finnegan's Wake as a collage,
yeah,
how do you read it to get that effect?
It looks like a collage. You've looked at it. It looks like a collage, right?
Right.
But how do you translate it? That's the point. What you do is, first of all, you look at the book, you look at the page, and you imagine James Joyce in Paris going up and down in the 20s, up and down his radio, tuning into Irish radio, British radio, European radio.
Uh-huh.
And he's going up and down the shortwave dial, whatever kind of radio they had in the 20s. And as he's moving, he's getting all kinds of different national languages coming into his Paris apartment.
Uh-huh.
All right? So the collage of the radio input, which was a new environment, a hidden ground in the 20s, he translated into book form.
Right.
All right? So that's the technological figure-ground relationship between the book and the new environment of the radio that Finnegan's Wake's all about. And that's why you don't have to get lost in the content at the beginning when you understand that pattern. Now, you meditate on that, on Finnegan's Wake. Once you know that, you've got a handle. You've got a conceptual version of the percept of what he was describing.
So he was doing what Neil Cassidy was doing with Radio I Ching, just hitting the button and it always relates.
Right. Neil Cassidy was just retrieving that radio sensibility because the 60s was a celebration of the radio environment in a positive sense. The 80s were a celebration of the radio environment in a negative sense. That's what Reagan was. He was a sports broadcaster on radio. These were rear-view mirror retrievals, nostalgic archetypal anesthetics, and that's what the hippies and the pranksters were part of. But that's not what was really going on in the 60s. I mean, that's why Cassidy, he died. He didn't have any long-range staying power. It was understood. He was just replaying what Joyce was doing when it was significant in the 20s. But taking that point, that you understand the making of book and radio, which is Finnegan's Wake,
yeah.
then you can start looking at the content and the collage, and you start to see other patterns. And eventually you'll see that all ten thunders refer to technological, historical phases of man. The radio thunder is the ninth thunder. And you'll notice the last syllables in the ninth thunder is, it's the eighth thunder. All right, now let me just think this. The eighth thunder is Papa Appears. That's movie and radio, pop culture. The ninth thunder is airplane and car. Okay, I'd say radio is the eighth thunder, all right? You can just look at Marshall McLuhan's War and Peace in the Global and you'll see the chart where it lays out the technological meanings of the thunders. Now, either the eighth or ninth thunder ends in the syllables car, car, act, C-A-R-A-C-T. The car act was an environment in the teens and 20s, all right? And because it was inside electric environment, it was a mobile theater. So therefore, the medium of the car becomes an act, a theatrical prop, all right? An actor on the stage. And there it is, embedded in the eighth or ninth thunder, car, car, act, the last syllables. Now, Papa's Appears, that was the rise of Big Brother, which was a radio effect. Radio created a centralizing effect. You know, the Stalin, Hitler, Churchill, who's the other guy? Roosevelt era, and Mao Zedong, all right? All these guys were radio big brothers, big male figures. Papa Appears, all right? And you just think of the image of Hitler screaming. You see that he's Papa, Big Brother, appearing as a dominant figure for the radio effect. Now, that was the 20s and 30s. And that's in the Eighth Thunder, I think, begins Papa Appears. All right, so Joyce spelled out the effects of each technological phase leading up to the Tenth Thunder, which is about television, the final technological matrix. And therefore, he went between book and radio. He mated all the media and its effects in a chronological study, but it was merged into a radio collage, as if you were presenting the whole history of human development on a radio show. You get that? And so radio is, again, the final means via the book. But its content is all the other media, including the future one of TV. Isn't that a phenomenal piece of literature to do that?
Yeah. I'm going to have to listen to what you just said about five times.
Yeah, no,
later.
Yeah,
so,
it's important.
But let me just jump on virtual reality.
Okay, that's the next topic, yeah.
Not the media kind, but the kind where you put on the headset.
Yeah.
Now, something about...
That's what I've been talking about.
Okay, is that doesn't that go beyond TV, the interpenetrating, you go into the environment almost literally?
No, with television you are the screen. With the cathode ray tube shooting the electrons at you and into your gut, you are the screen, whereas with movie, the camera projects light from the back of the room off the wall, and then you get the image, right?
Yeah,
it's light.
High definition.
Yeah, it's light off. Whereas TV is low definition, it's light through. The light really is coming from where? We don't know. It's just figured in the television set, but it's bursting through from all over. We think of it coming through the electric wires, but electricity is an environment. It's just conduited. Remember, did you hear the show 2 weeks ago where Dublin talked about Velikovsky's idea that he had this idea in the 50s that the sun was a cathode ray tube, that there was this ether, electromagnetic, solar wind flowing all around, and the suns were just like a conduit, a wire, and therefore were like a TV screen. Now, Velikovsky was projecting the hidden ground of the TV image in the 50s, and he was translating it through the scientific medium, the scientific genre. Now, you are the screen, if you can understand that, because there's no light barrier between you, a light wall between you and the screen. You are as much inside the TV set as outside of it. All right? In other words, it's LSD. You take LSD. Now, virtual reality is to give you the LSD movie effects on your head. Now, the problem is America is a visually biased, a kinetic and manipulative culture, a movie product of the movie environment. LSD was a movie drug. Heroin is beyond movie, puts on the whole electronic solar wind universe as a rush. All right? You don't get that with LSD. You get a rush, but you get dreams that money can buy. Now, virtual reality, it gives you trips to Mars, gives you movie scenarios put on your skull, put over your head. All right?
Yeah, but you choose where you go. It's co-creative, whereas when you're watching TV, you go into a coma, just like heroin.
All right, like heroin, that's right. Now, the new thing about their virtual reality technology is that's interactive. Now, I laid this out many months ago, is that the reason electric autonomy and the me decade and the 80s greedy, narcissistic me dimension was exaggerated with a, you know, the the yuppie tactile bias, that was the element of moving past the mass, not in the sense of mass man, but the imposing a centralized environment on you that you had to move in lockstep with, tribal rhythm, the drummer of the TV effect. Once you had satellite dishes, remote control, VCRs, and now virtual reality tech, you can modulate the tactile effect at your own time, your own pace.
Right.
So, yes, so TV as a collective archetype has just been made decentralized and fragmented for personal use at your own time and rhythm. All right, so yeah, you're doing LSD at your own pace.
Well, you sort of get locked into the dosage, whatever.
That you want, yeah.
Whatever you end up getting a hold of.
Yeah, now the reason...
Like, if you were doing Gorby acid, you would be in worse shape than...
than this.
Yeah.
So you can control the massage it does on you. All right? You can program it. See, this is the super angelic electric autonomy. This is where we're post-electronic. We don't have the tribal drum hypnotism happening to us as we did when Ed Sullivan was on only once and you had to watch it, right?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and now you can watch reruns of Ed Sullivan at any time you want. So you're in a different time zone and replaying a different time zone in a different context, right?
So what has it mutated that the global village, you know, warming ourselves with this fire, but we're not tuned into the same content? How does that change?
Say that again. Warm air, fire? I didn't get that sentence.
Oh, McLuhan was saying how the global village warms itself around the tribal fire, which is television. But if we're not tuned into the same content at the same time, then it's no longer tribal in that sense.
Yeah, see, now, again, you've only heard about three or four shows. I pointed out many times that Marshall did not highlight the global village thing. That was highlighted more by Bucky Fuller.
Okay.
The oligarchs and the pinks tried to hoik the global village idea onto McLuhan because he was big in the 60s, and they were trying to move to a world government based in Jerusalem, and the late which fell apart. All right, that move didn't happen. So they were hoiking up Marshall to get people used to the idea of a world government. But Marshall's main percept was the global theater, that the media were the actors in the global theater, and the media were whole galaxies in themselves, you know, the Gutenberg galaxy, the electric environment he called the Marconi galaxy. These galaxies interacted on the old ground of solar system or outer space, but inside an invisible space, which was tactile environment. And therefore, as the car act, the theatrical role of media archetypes stepped around on this invisible stage. And you know what the stage is? The stage is your credit card that gives you access. Beautiful, right?
Yeah.
Pattern recognition. You have access to these media archetypes. But in you were saying, so global theater is what we're in, and we've moved on to solar theater now. But you got to look at the global village image as a really obsolete image. That happened in the 30s. That's why internationalism was hiked up by the Rockefeller bankers. That's when the... revitalized the League of Nations and developed the United Nations. The United Nations failed because it was a bureaucracy inside whole other new environments caused by TV, computer, and satellite. All right, now just to zero in on, you were saying the tribal village warms itself on the cool medium of television.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that was a rearview mirror activity because electric autonomous once the theater took place. All right, once the global theater had been established. But we have refined and left-hemisphered, fine-tuned the global theater so that everybody has an obvious independence and no longer subject to warming around the tribal village. So McLuhan was writing stuff that dealt with the electronic autonomy in the 60s. He was dealing with the global theater effect, not the global village. And if you know that, you'll have a monopoly over your whole neighborhood and anybody you know, because I imagine none of your friends are listening to this except you, right?
Probably true, yeah.
And so you're going to tell them stuff when they're taught McLuhan in school and forced to memorize it. You're going to be able to tell them stuff that they're not going to tell you that McLuhan said.
Yeah. Good.
I mean, Gorbachev is going to make McLuhan mandatory for managers in the Soviet Union when they replace Marxism and Leninism, which they're doing now. They're going to bring in McLuhan. They're going to make that a mandatory dogma. And again, the pinks will try to fool around with McLuhan and make it wrong or make it ineffective. You're only going to get the real McLuhan story from me because I have a world monopoly in understanding him because I worked with him and I understood him. Not many people did. His son understood him, and if you really want to understand Finnegan's Wake, you get Eric McLuhan's thesis on Finnegan's Wake.
Oh, okay.
At Ann Arbor. You just call them up, and they'll tell you you got a right to Eric. You just call, look up Eric McLuhan. I think it's T.E. McLuhan in the phone book. He's here in Toronto. You get in touch with him. He'll give you a note that you'll send to Ann Arbor, the University of Microfilms for all PhDs, and they will send you that PhD. And when you understand, when you read that book, you'll be happy.
That's great.
For a while. But happier and longer than you've ever been before.
Yeah, but not true happiness, or it wouldn't go away.
That's right. Okay. True happiness is staying in touch with me.
Okay.
Now, the virtual reality, now you're beginning to see what I mean. Okay, I hijacked it away there. Go back to your original thought that you were going along about, you were wondering, how did McLuhan deal with the global warming, you know, the tribal village warming stuff around the TV. You were going somewhere with that. Okay.
Go ahead.
No, you go away. Go ahead with what you were going to do. Say.
No, I was just responding to you. That's
right.
That was just a.
In other words, I did respond to it. Yeah,
you did.
So for the virtual reality, you're sticking it on your eye. It's more eye. Maybe they'll have acoustic forms of it too. Do they have that yet? Acoustic forms? Have they released that to you?
I don't know.
Okay. Basically, though, people think of visual fantasies. It's your goggles in front of your eyes.
That's right.
Okay.
Now Robert Anton Wilson is very into these mimes that entrain brainwaves at certain frequencies and alter states of consciousness.
Yeah,
is that post
altered state of visual and kinetic consciousness, teleconsciousness? Okay, kinetic is moving around like a movie, and the movie is an extension of the eye and the foot. Television is the extension of the eye and the hand. Okay, with movie and kineticism that comes from, kineticism effect that the movie amplifies. The Americans love this stuff. This is the American dream, and the electric autonomy version of having your own movie is being in a car. Right? And then also going to UFOs. That's why